training for pilots of very light jets. What will be required? What will be a good idea? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Max Trescott, 2008 CFI of the Year, General Aviation Advocate, and he has a great blog, very interesting blog and very informative at maxtrescott.com. Max, thanks for taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
Paul, great to be talking with you again.
One of the topics you addressed recently in your blog was entitled VLJ Training, What Will Be Required? And there are two ways you could read that. One is what will be required as just common sense. The other is what will be required in terms of the regulatory environment. And I think that in your blog, you briefly addressed both of those. First, let's talk in general about the very light jet safety situation. I think you mentioned recently that out of a fleet of around 200 aircraft that are out there now, there have been a couple of accidents that allow us to at least start the analysis process. What have you learned in your study of the accidents to date?
Well, I think as most people suspected, the things that we're seeing happen are the kinds of things that we've always seen happen in other kinds of areas. So I don't think VLJs are going to succeed in inventing any new kinds of accidents, and the way they're distributed may not be a whole lot different either. There was an accident very recently, just a few weeks ago, in Southern California, and what was really fascinating about it was how similar it was, virtually identical, to another accident at the same airport on the same runway by a totally different class of jet exactly 2 years before. So shall we talk about that one for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. There was a Cessna Citation Mustang. So there are now, what, about 66 Mustangs in use. Mm-hmm. And this was an aircraft that was departing from Northern California, about a one-hour flight. Along the way, they had a couple of failures, and those per se didn't really contribute to the accident at the end, other than they may have overloaded the pilot slightly and increased his fatigue. So you mentioned that one of the displays was flickering, and that at one point the autopilot disconnected and he had to hand fly the aircraft for the rest of the way. But then what happened was he arrived, according to his report, about 15 knots too fast on final. The air traffic controller reports that he was high. He touched down at the Carlsbad Airport beyond the halfway point of the runway. Now, that runway is only about 4,600 feet long. And what he realized as he was reaching the end of the runway was that he was not gonna make it. So he purposely ground looped the aircraft at the very end. And the picture is fascinating because there you can see the runway 6 identifier and the end of the tarmac right next to the airplane. There is a steep cliff that drops off right after that runway. So I think he made a really wise choice. But if you go back into it, you kind of have to wonder, well, what were all the factors that led up to this, and why didn't he initiate an early go-around? So I think in this particular case, we have, again, pilot judgment kinds of situations where had he made an early decision to go around, this would have been a non-event.
I was going to say, you say he made a really wise choice. Unfortunately, it was his first one of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and if you look at some of the other factors involved, there was a small tailwind. Let's see, the aircraft was high on approach and so on. So, yeah, when you add those things up, this was just the final item in the chain. But then if you roll back 2 years on the same runway, a heavier jet came in, not a VLJ, and it was fascinating because every one of those factors was identical. So the aircraft came in, by their estimate, 30 knots above landing speed. The aircraft was high on approach. Touchdown more than halfway down the runway, had in that case a 6-knot tailwind instead of a three-knot tailwind. Now, after they touched down, the first officer said something about shall we go around, and at that point the captain applied full power. The airplane left the runway, but unfortunately didn't really clear the terrain. It struck the ILS antenna, and then descended from there and crashed and burned, killing four people on board. So you can look at the contrast between those two. In the one case, we had a VLJ being operated by a single pilot. In the latter case, we actually had a two-pilot crew in a much heavier non-VLJ jet doing exactly the same thing, however, with disastrous results. So I think here we have just an amazing contrast between the two, where you could probably say pretty clearly, no, I don't think the VLJs are going to necessarily have any more accident types. It's going to be the same type of accident, and we're just going to need lots of jet-type training that would apply to any jet for anybody in the VLJ.
Well, it's interesting you term it that way, Max, because I think what VLJs are really targeted at, or at least many of them, are pilots moving up from high-performance piston aircraft. And so we're talking, you've kind of approached this from the standpoint of they're not going to be any more or less dangerous than any other jet, but they're going to be sold to a bunch of people who've never flown any jets.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the distinction that needs to be made. I think that VLJ is going to be treated just like any other jet, which means it's going to require the same level of training. The systems are going to be more complex. People are going to have to spend more time remaining proficient and understanding the aircraft thoroughly. And so the comparison with a VLJ is really much closer to existing jets, which means that, yeah, for folks who are transitioning from piston aircraft, they may find it's a little bit of a jump, and it's going to be more transition training required than it would be from the typical step up within the piston line.
Let's talk when we come back from the break about what specific kinds of training you think are in store for successful VLJ pilots. My guest is Max Trescott. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, General Aviation Advocate, 2008 CFI of the Year. We're talking about very light jets and what will be required in terms of the training environment to make the pilots who fly these planes successful and safe. Max, we've already seen some of the manufacturers working hard at getting simulators up and running to offer training in their jets to customers who buy them. This looks like an approach that is more like the airline world than like the GA world. Is that the right direction to go?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no question. If you look at the training that's being done currently by both manufacturers of the VLJs that are shipping today, the Cessna and the Clips, that environment is a very heavy simulator environment. And so the type rating that they're issuing to these new owner pilots is requiring first many hours in the simulator before they actually get into the aircraft. And then some of the other things that they need to learn a lot more about that they're probably not getting in traditional piston aircraft, one is systems. We've got far more complex systems, pressurization systems, hydraulic systems, second engine, all kinds of systems that they normally don't have to deal with. High altitude training, obviously, the physiology of flying up above 25,000 feet is very different. The kind of dangers that you can encounter there with oxygen system failures and things like that, very different as well. And finally, CRM, cockpit resource management training. I think that that's going to be incredibly important to anybody who's flying the VLJ. Now, granted, some of these are going to be flown single pilot, but for those cases where they do have somebody in the cockpit who can assist, then the pilots need to be trained to involve the passenger in the right seat to assist in whatever way they can.
Are there any ways in which you would expect VLJs to be safer than or less trouble for pilots than some of the aircraft they're moving up from? For example, someone who's in a high-performance piston twin may be used to, especially without FADEC, has been used to juggling a lot of different things on a fairly short checklist on things like approach to an airport. Are the jets going to be any easier in some of these regards?
Yeah, I think you actually hit upon the area where it probably is going to be simpler, and that's going to be the power management. And certainly, from an owner's standpoint, too, it's also going to be nice to be flying a more reliable turbine-type engine rather than the pistons, which don't have quite the same kind of reliability. So, yeah, that's certainly an offset area where things may be a little bit easier.
How much penetration do you expect VLJs to have into the market? You mentioned there are 200 aircraft out there now. How big is the market for these things?
That is the $64,000 question, or maybe in this case the the $500 million question. I have seen all kinds of estimates. I think the issue of whether VLJs are going to be successful You know, that question I think is already answered. I think they are. They're out there shipping. They're going to do well. The question is to whether we're going to have, 10,000 of these jets or 1,000 of these jets. You know, it's probably somewhere in between. And no, I don't think anybody really is going to know for sure. And of course, part of that's going to depend upon things like fuel prices. It's going to depend upon what's happening with the airlines. Are the airlines going to continue to operate in a way that more and more people are going to try and find other alternatives than standing in the TSA line and getting searched? So I think there are a lot of pros and cons that can affect the size of the VLJ market, and we're just not going to know for sure. Right now, the Cessna Corporation has a backlog of about 500 orders for their Mustang, so that's going to keep them busy for at least a couple of years. You look at Eclipse, I believe their backlog is around 2,600 jets, and again, that's going to keep them busy for a few years as well.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I know that FAA term, which was highly criticized, that VLJs will result in the skies being darkened with dentists, struck me as kind of humorous. It really ticked some people off. But if you sit back and think about it, if just the backlogs currently in existence are filled, that's going to be a significant number of aircraft in the system.
Yeah, that's true. And the good news is I think many of these aircraft will be going into smaller airports, so they probably won't be going into the Atlantas and the Kennedys and the places like that. So I don't think that it's going to really have a huge impact on the air traffic, particularly because most of the delays are occurring in the large airports where they've got too many airliners trying to all leave at the same time and all use the same runway. So if anything, this may increase the load a little bit en route. But I think that there's a lot of space to increase traffic en route.
You know, it occurs to me it would be a waste of this interview not to ask you the question on which you have the most expertise. Is the fact that the Garmin G1000 and similar glass panels are finding their way into general aviation piston aircraft going to make the transition any easier for pilots moving up to VLJs?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are people out there who are taking advantage of that right now. I was just talking with a gentleman about a week ago, and he is currently flying a Columbia, or let's call it a Cessna 400, and he purchased that specifically because he does have a Cessna Mustang on order, and he wanted to get good practice for he and the other folks who fly this airplane in a G1000 system beforehand. And I've heard the same thing with folks buying Barons, for example, for their G1000 as well. So we're actually in a remarkable era where people can use virtually the same systems in a piston-powered aircraft that they're going to use in a jet, and we've never, ever been in that situation before. So from that standpoint, the transition training is actually easier.
We should point out to our listeners, if they don't know already, that Max has a book out and a training course for the G1000. You can find out more details from the links provided at his website at maxtrescott.com. That's maxtrescott.com. Max, we always appreciate your insight. It's been great talking to you. We'll talk to you again soon.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.